This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. This week, we talk to Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator about stubble burning.
If they see that the smoke is going to disperse, then those days are good burning days.
Alexis Keenlin of Alberta Farmer Express reveals a surprising way to control Canada thistle in your pasture.
A Montana study found that they traveled 9 kilometers from their release site over a decade.
And Dave Sims of Commodity News Service Canada brings us a look at the markets. That's all on Between the Rows with this week's host, Dave Bedard.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. With all the smoke we saw in the skies this summer, farmers probably aren't relishing the idea of adding any more of it once the harvest is done. But yep, fall stubble burning season is almost upon us. Here in southern Manitoba, we're seeing fewer and fewer farmers, though, asking for burning permits for the second year running. That's partly because there are new and better ways to keep all those nutrients and organic matter on the ground. But don't expect that burning trend line to keep heading downward indefinitely. To talk smoke and stubble with us, we've got Alan Dawson from the Manitoba Cooperator. Alan, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Now, full disclosure here, first off, I'll admit that years ago, lighting up piles and windrows of flax straw was a pretty cool job for some farm kids such as myself. But obviously, farmers don't still do this sort of thing just for the yucks. Let's talk about the reasons why some crop and forage growers still burn residue out on the field.
Well, the main reasons are to control residue, crop residue that's difficult to work into the field. So like you were mentioning flax straw, and that's one that's difficult to work with because it's such a tenacious fiber and takes a long time to break down in the soil as well. So that's one that typically would be burned if it couldn't be baled. There is a bit of a market for flax straw. And then some crop residue, some forage seed benefits from being burned off, and there are things like perennial ryegrass, which after it's been harvested quite often, farmers find it more convenient to burn the stubble or burn the windrows left after thrashing that crop in the following spring.
Mm-hmm. And here in Manitoba, also with the Red River gumbo soil that we've got here, it's also a little easier to it's also not necessarily as easy to work this residue into the ground here.
That's right. It's a heavy clay and holds a fair bit of water, and it can be difficult to get that crop residue worked into the ground, especially when you have a lot of it. And you know, we're typically in the Red River Valley growing some good high yields, and often that comes with a fair bit of residue, especially with crops like oats and corn as well. And wheat changed maybe a little bit over time. We've got shorter varieties, so there's less residue from those, the semi-dwarf wheats, and typically, being shorter, there's less straw to contend with, and if it's being straight cut, it's maybe a little easier to deal with as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we've also got some pretty densely populated areas out here in the Red River Valley too, so straw and stubble burning became a bit of a problem back in the day. Flashing forward to 2018 here now, farmers here in the capital region of Manitoba can't just burn any time they please, can they?
Well, that's right. And actually, even the whole province of agricultural part of the province, there's a burning restrictions from August 1 until November. And so the farmers that are in 10 municipalities right around Winnipeg, they're required to get burning permits. And farmers in the rest of the province, they can find out whether they can burn or not by phoning a toll-free line or checking a website. So probably a little bit more flexibility for the farmers that are away from the capital region, because as you alluded to, back in the 1980s and early 90s, there were quite a few problems with stubble burning and the smoke drifting into Winnipeg. At times it was just kind of an inconvenience, but there were other times when it was actually a major health issue. It was, causing breathing problems for people with, compromised breathing systems and asthma and that kind of thing. So it was that's what resulted in the regulations coming into place.
Now, with the crop residue burning authorization system we have here again in the province, people may be less likely now to notice the smoke even when there's burning going on, because it's also tied to the weather conditions of the day, isn't it?
That's right. It's interesting. We've seen a big drop in requests for burning permits the last 2 years, and the last 2 years have been dry. So there's been an extra demand for straw to be baled, and probably less straw too, with maybe shorter crops being, because it's been dry. So we're seeing the demand maybe coming down a bit, but back in the 80s and 90s, part of the problem was farmers were burning at times that made sense in terms of controlling the fires. So at night when it was damper and when there wasn't a lot of wind, so their objective was to burn the windrows, try to protect the stubble in between, and so you had a lot burning when there's no wind and damp conditions, and at night that smoke would hang around and not disperse. Now the Manitoba Agriculture is monitoring the weather conditions. They have models and so on, and if they see that the smoke is going to disperse, then those days are good burning days, and farmers are allowed to burn. So the burning that does go on, we're probably not really aware of it because the smoke is dispersing properly.
Now, we touched on this briefly before, too. Just in the last couple of years, the number of burning permits issued has been on the decline. What's the difference been in the last couple of years compared to the years prior to that? Just the years immediately prior to that?
Well, I think it's for a long time, it's been on a gradual trend. It varies from year to year depending on conditions. So the last 2 years were dry. That meant some baling was going on, and then also farmers were able to have a period, good working soil, working conditions to work crop residue into the ground. But some years, a couple of years ago, the 3 and 4 years ago, there was a case where a fair number of farmers were dropping oat straw to bale, and then the weather turned bad. There was a lot of rain, and that straw deteriorated and couldn't be baled, and that resulted in farmers having to burn those windrows, and so we had a bit more burning at that time. And that's what Manitoba Agriculture says now. We've got a lot of things that have changed over time, better straw choppers, chaff spreaders, shorter crops, better tillage equipment, a change in the cropping profile too. We have more lower residue crops like soybeans in the Red River Valley. So as a result, we've seen maybe less burning, but there are times when when burning will still have to occur. The thing is that the regulations will ensure, for the most part, that when the burning does go on, the smoke is able to get away and less likely to cause problems in the city and in urban areas in terms of air quality.
Mm-hmm. But depending on the conditions over the next summer to come, farmers who aren't burning this year might have to revisit it next fall.
That's right, depending on the weather conditions and how much residue they have and that sort of thing.
Now, obviously, some of the nutrients that could go back into the soil are going away if a farmer has to burn. How much of a nutrient loss are we talking here?
Well, Manitoba Agriculture says if the burning is restricted to the windrow, just the product that's dropped, let's say for baling or in a row so it can be burned, so you're just burning that, not the whole field corner to corner, it's not as maybe a big a loss as one might think. For example, a ton of straw, there'd be 24 pounds of nitrogen in there, 3 pounds of phosphorus, and 32 pounds of potash. So it's not insignificant. There's value there. And of course, in addition to the nutrients, there's organic matter, which is important to soil tilth and fertility and so on, water holding capacity. And especially in those heavy clay soils in the Red River Valley, organic matter can improve that soil quite a bit too. So it has value. But if burning or baling, just the windrows, has to be done occasionally, it's not according to the people like at Manitoba Agriculture, sort of not the end of the world. It's something that you can roll with, but certainly, if you're burning corner to corner every year, that would probably be problematic over time in terms of, you know, the you're burning up more nutrients if you're burning corner to corner, and of course you're going to have a lot less organic matter as well.
So, in all probability, we might actually see, you know, more nutrients left on the field this year, and therefore more money not quite so much money left on the table, so to speak.
Well, certainly the stubble between the windrows will be there. I think a lot of fields this year in the valley, you know, cereal crops for sure. We've even heard of, and I've even seen some fields of canola straw have been baled because of the shortage of livestock feed with the drought and dry weather and less hay and pasture production. Some of that canola straw, I think, probably would maybe be going for things like bedding and that sort of thing. But you can, you know, add molasses or treat cereal straw with anhydrous ammonia to bring up the protein to or mix grain along with that straw to be a feed supplement.
Mm-hmm. So that's something we'll certainly be keeping an eye on over the next few weeks as burning season kicks into high gear. Alan, thanks very much for coming on Between the Rows.
You're welcome.
Alan Dawson is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator at Miami, Manitoba. For any farmers around Winnipeg listening to us on the road or in the field, crop residue burning authorizations for the day can be heard at 1-800-265-1233. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. If we were to play the word association game right now and I said weevils, your answer might be cabbage seed pod or pea leaf or something not fit for broadcast. But as much as we'd like to go medieval on those weevils, when it comes to pasture reprieval, some specific weevils aren't so evil. Alexis Keeneland of Alberta Farmer Express has been talking to pasture and forage specialists in West Central Alberta about putting weevils to work, and she joins us now. Alexis, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, it's nice to be back.
Let's start with the problem at hand, Canada thistle. And in pasture, this is a little more complicated to control than just letting fly with a tank of Liberty or Roundup.
Yeah, it's a perennial weed that's really hard to control and difficult to attack. It can really take over pasture and send up thousands of seeds. So individual plants send up tons of shoots, and they can really take over a field. The big problem is cattle won't eat it, so it can cause major productivity losses in a field. I think you can use a herbicide on it, but I'm not an expert, so I'm not really going to go into the details.
Mm-hmm. So how did they come up with the idea of weevils? And let's back up a little bit. Who are they?
well, they is the West Central Forage Association. They're based in Evansburg. They're a nonprofit, producer-driven agricultural research operation group that's kind of based in the West Central part of Alberta.
So now here we are introducing plant-eating insects to a new environment with plenty of crops around. And so far, to me at least, this sounds a bit like an old Simpsons episode, only a lot less funny.
Well, what it works is that I guess the weevils don't really eat any other plants. They lay their eggs in the thistle rosettes, and the larvae eat their way down the stem of the thistle as they exit. After they exit, they pupate in the soil, and then the adults emerge and feed on the thistle leaves.
So they've been tried and tested. It's not like they're suddenly going to turn on us and start eating, canola or wheat or barley or what have you.
No. They're a safe way of controlling the Canada thistle.
So does it sound like these weevils might establish a population up here over time?
A Montana study found that they traveled 9 kilometers from their release site over a decade. So they're not going very far if they are here. And the research that they were saying said that people like keep on buying more. So I'm guessing sounds like something that you have to replenish.
Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm a rancher with a thistle problem and I want it gone. What am I asking for again? And how many of these weevils do I need to bring in?
Well, it really depends on the size of the area that you need taken care of. Each tray of weevils, there's 105 weevils, and that tray of 105 costs $200 plus GST. The West Central Forage Association is suggesting three methods: buying as many trays as you can afford and topping them up with releases every 1 or 2 years. You could also release a tray in the worst area of Canada thistle and release one or more in the following years. Or just release one tray and wait for them to slowly spread. In the story I wrote, it says that the trays start arriving at the end of August, so that gives time for the adults to adjust and overwinter.
So all this contact information for the West Central Forage Association is in your article. I don't know if you've got that handy there. If you're able to let our listeners know who they can contact to receive all these weevils, so to speak.
Yeah. So the email address is manager@westcentralforage.com. So that's who you can contact. You can just Google West Central Forage, and they have a really good website and contact information on there, too. Or the phone number you can call is 780-727-4447.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be a West Central Forage Association member to get the weevils. They've been selling them to producers all over Alberta, and they said the program is really popular, and they're getting phone calls every day.
Mm-hmm.
People are really wanting these weevils.
And the type of weevil, again, is called the?
Stem mining weevil.
Stem mining weevil. Sounds very authoritative. Well, we'll be keeping it. We'll certainly be watching this to see how the uptake presents itself in on the prairies and the weeks, months, and years to come. Now, changing the subject entirely to your own work as a novelist and a poet, for those out there who don't yet follow you on social media, you've got a new novel coming out in the not-too-distant future. Congratulations. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it'll be coming out in 2020, so that's still a ways away, with Now or Never Publishing, which is out of Vancouver.
Hmm.
The book took me about 4 years to write, but it does actually have an agricultural theme and was influenced by my work. So right now it's called Mad Cow. I'm saying right now because sometimes in the editing process, things can change, and I'll be working with editors and the team at Now or Never to, turn it from a manuscript into a book. Like I said, it took me about 4 years to write. It was a hard process. It's tells the story of an Alberta farm family dealing with the effects of the BSE crisis and kind of the effects on the family. I really got interested in it because I started talking to a lot of ranchers, and I would see ranchers right on the board May 20th, 2003, and then they would start talking about the effects of the BSE crisis on their families and their farms, and I just got really interested in the story. And then one day I was just driving along, and I said, and I just had the thought, I was like, I have to write a novel about this, this is what I'm going to write about, and that became it, and that was I was working on another book. I actually wrote a biography too, so I did that first. And then it was just that this was the novel that I was going to work on and that I was going to do. So, and it was a long path to trying to find a publisher for it. So I'm glad that Now or Never took the chance, and it's going to be 2 more years to work with him before the book will be out. But I'm looking forward to it. It's exciting.
It's very exciting, and we'll be keeping an eye on it. And in case the title changes in between now and then, I'll certainly be checking Amazon, going by your name as opposed to the book title.
Yeah, well, hopefully there'll be some, like, I'll talk about it on social media. Book titles do change. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason, and I know that Mad Cow is a problematic sentence for ranchers. I did that Mad Cow kind of for more of the urban audience, and also because at one point I was being mentored by Lawrence Hill, and he loved that title. That was my working title, and he just loved it. And I was like, okay, well, you're the author of the Book of Negroes. I trust you. So I was like, I'll keep it for now.
I'm sure there will be ways to market it that even if it does have negative connotations for a lot of ranchers out there, they'd certainly know that you of all people would be able to make it work. Alexis Keeneland, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Alexis Keeneland is a reporter with Alberta Farmer Express in Edmonton. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, the United States Department of Agriculture managed to surprise more than a few commodity traders last week with a production report that was bearish for soybeans, which in turn threw a small-sized anvil into the canola market. Dave Sims of Commodity News Service Canada is following these developments, among others, and he joins us now. Dave, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Yeah, good to be here.
Now, USDA's outlooks for crop production and ending stocks are as good a place to start as any. It looks like they were bearish not just for soybeans, but for corn and wheat as well.
Yeah, overall, the USDA pretty much said we'd be looking at bumper crops for another year. Like the corn production, the agency pegged it at 14.8 billion. And that was up by about a quarter of a billion bushels over the last month. So that's a pretty big hike for, mm-hmm. you know, 1 month's difference. Yields were also up. Like going into the report, most analysts thought the estimate for soybean yields would be 176 to 178 bushels an acre. But the USDA came out at a little over 181. So that sent the market plunging. Like before the report came out, we were around the $3.67 mark, $3.67 a bushel. But then we plunged after that, and we've been chopping around $3.50. So, but the good news for corn was that the U.S. and Mexico struck that agreement on NAFTA, so that's opened up the market to U.S. growers. For wheat, the USDA, it hiked the estimate for global ending stocks by 2.3 million tons, and that was a bit bearish for the market. It didn't really send it plunging, though. Like the market seems locked in a range between $5 a bushel to $5.25, so it definitely has some technical support holding it up. The news that really caught the eye, though, in the report was the USDA said it expected Russia's wheat harvest to be better than expected, and that threw a few investors for a loop because, you know, they had that severe drought. But despite it all, Russia's been exporting like crazy, and one of the reasons, or maybe the main reason why they're doing that, is because the ruble is so low in value right now. It's really taken a header, and so Russian wheat is very attractive right now to buyers. One little hiccup, though, and one note of good news for U.S. wheat and the exporters in the U.S. is the Russian exports. They were kind of going pretty strong there, and they seem to have slowed down a bit recently. There's some new sanitation requirements that were imposed on them. So that, that was a bit bearish for the Russian wheat exports. And yeah, like I think you alluded to, soybeans were the hardest hit of all three of them, which in turn weighed down canola. Like I think by now everyone's aware that the yield and production numbers for soybeans got bumped up, and so there's a chance that this could be another record year for U.S. soybeans. Like I won't spend too much time on the numbers, but just to reiterate that it's tough news for canola. But of course, you know, the U.S.-China trade war continues to drag on, so Canada will do its best to try and sell as much canola as it can to China.
Hmm. Now, there's also a new report coming out Wednesday from Statistics Canada based on satellite imagery instead of farmer surveys this time around. Now, by the time this podcast gets out, the report will be released, but what are commodity traders expecting to see happen?
Yeah, well, when it comes to the satellite-based report, it's still fairly new. So, like, I'm not sure it has that many hardcore followers yet, but, like, a lot of, I mean, everyone's interested to see what it's going to say. And everyone will be, like, the trade will be curious to see if the satellite data kind of matches the survey-based model that came out last month. It pegged canola production at 19.2 million tons this year. So, I mean, that'll really be the thing most people are watching for, whether those two numbers match. Like, some traders think there's more canola out there anyway. But then I talked to one trader regularly who thinks the crop will turn out to be less than that, like closer to 18 million. And the reason why is that cold snap in Alberta and the damage he thinks it's done to the crop. So I mean, everyone will be paying attention to the satellite data to see what it says. But, you know, at the end of the day, of course, the yield will tell the story. And I think, like, when we finally do get our yield numbers and our production data for the year, I think a lot of participants in the canola industry will go back and try and see, you know, which one was closer, the traditional model or this new satellite-based data one.
Mm-hmm. Now, apart from what's been happening in Alberta, the harvest conditions so far on the prairies elsewhere also seem to have traders playing it pretty cautious.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's definitely caution in the market when it comes to canola. Like the last time we were, you know, even at the $500 per ton mark for, you know, the dominant contract in canola was back in the third week of August. So since then, kind of $490 seems to be the kind of the safe point for most traders. I mean, there's a few bulls in the market who have tried to take a run at 500, but it's gone nowhere. And so we have kind of just been chopping around as traders wait for more information about the crop. Also, some investors are kind of parked on the sidelines right now, and they're waiting for the new crop canola supplies to come online when the price will likely drop a bit. So, yeah, we're seeing that. And the funds are definitely short in the market right now. And so I think it'll be probably another month until we see some real action start to take place.
Mm-hmm. So we'll certainly be following that over the next few weeks. Dave, thanks very much for coming on Between the Rows.
Oh, my pleasure.
Dave Sims writes for Commodity News Service Canada in Winnipeg. That's all we have for you on this week's Between the Rows, but we'll be back in a week's time with more stories from Glacier Farm Media's network of publications. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.